Today is the first Saturday of the month, and it is our speaker meeting. And I was very honored when, now I'm getting nervous, when I was asked to introduce our speaker today, because our speaker today is a very large part of my sobriety. And she is not only a close friend of mine, she is also a mentor. She, to me, is a shining example of what working the Alcoholics Anonymous program can do for you, but also what true faith and trust in your higher power and living your life according to His will can do for you. And it is my honor and pleasure to introduce to you Ms. Karen Kay.
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic, an addict, and a gambler. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. I really want to thank all those who made a special trip out here for me this morning. That means the world to me. I'm actually going to start to read. I'm going to read something because it calms me and centers me. I'm going to read the third step promises, which are found on page 63 of the big book. Says, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. I love that, and that's what my sobriety has been. All of a sudden, I am very nervous. I can hear my voice shaking, but it's okay. Anyways, I'm going to start at the beginning. I am the second youngest of seven children, born to a middle-class family in a little city called Lynn, Massachusetts. This is literally 10 minutes from Boston, so we grew up right in the heart of Massachusetts. I had a great childhood. I really don't have a lot of complaints. My parents were very loving. My brothers and sisters also, to this day, I'm very close with all of them. We may not talk for months, but when we get together, it's like we were never apart. That's just the way we are. And I love it that way. They've been a tremendous support for me. Even while I was using and drinking, they were supportive of me. But they have been instrumental in my recovery. We also grew up with a tremendous faith in God. My parents brought us all up on the principles of the Bible, which I guess is probably why this program came fairly easy to me, because it is based on the principles of the Bible. Just about everything you read in here, in some way or other, comes from that. And it made it easy for me to pick up. So anyways, okay, getting settled in now. So, all right, so living in Massachusetts, I went to a Catholic elementary school from grades 1 through 8, which, again, I had no problem in school. I had a few close friends. The thing I remember most about elementary school is that I was nervous. I'm even in very low grades, 1, 2, 3, I was a nervous, anxious child all the time, and that just continued throughout high school, really. Throughout college. So I remember that. I just, that nervousness. Was never one to raise my hand in school because I just didn't want to draw attention to myself. So that brings me up to grade 8. I went to, I did have a very close friend live the next street over. Her name was June. She went to a public school, and she's the one who I hung out with day and night and summertime and all. Thing I remember most about that friendship is that when she was with her friends, who were public school friends also, they would make fun of me and the other Catholic girls because we wore uniforms and we were Catholic and went to church every Sunday. And, you know, that was very hurtful for my best friend to go along with that stuff. But then she was awesome when the two of us were alone. She was truly my best friend when we were alone. But I did feel betrayed by her when she was making fun of me with the other friends, with her other friends. Anyways, 9th grade, I went to a public school, and at this point, you know, after being subjected to that being different from the other kids, I wanted to be with the cool group, the popular group. So I started doing all the things that the popular kids do, started smoking. I even tried weed, which I hate. That I think I've done that maybe a dozen times in my life, and it's just not the drug for me. It makes me paranoid beyond belief. Oh my gosh. So yeah, there was no problem. I did not get addicted to that one ever. I remember the first time I said a cuss word, I literally looked up the sky expecting the lightning to come out and strike me dead. So I was becoming one of the cool kids, the bad girls. It was that time too that I started pushing God to the side, because I knew other people would make fun of me because I loved God. And I really, up until my friends started making fun of me, I had no problems talking about Jesus or God, or, it was just no problem. But then when they started making fun of me, I stopped doing that and pushed them to the side. So anyways, I met my first boyfriend in the summer of the ninth grade, and I dated him throughout high school, and we drank on weekends, and we drank to get drunk. The thing I remember about it, I don't remember my first drink, but I absolutely remember how brave I was when I drank. I no longer had that nervousness and that anxiety I want to say it tormented me, because it did. It kept me from doing things. So alcohol became a very good friend, just on weekends. I'm a good Catholic family. I got to go to school, I got to study and all, so I did not drink during the weeks. So I dated him through high school. High school, I actually loved high school. I was still very nervous when I was in classes and with people. However, my saving grace in high school, I loved sports. I want to mention too, I grew up with a dad and four older brothers they'd sit in the living room. I grew up at a time when the Celtics, Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, those were the big players. Those were awesome players. So we're watching them, and then even the Bruins, it was Bobby Orr and the Tasmanian Devil, Terry O'Reilly. That's who I grew up watching. And my dad would get so excited in that living room. So I grew up to have a love of sports, absolutely. And I wanted to attend all the high school sports games, so I became a cheerleader so I could get in free. That was my goal, is I wanted to go to all the games, and I did. So I became a cheerleader. I'm kind of surprised I made the team. I wasn't really cheerleader quality material, but I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. We actually won a cheerleading competition when I was in the 11th grade, and it was a blast. I have to admit, I thoroughly enjoyed that whole experience. And it made me, and it absolutely connected my bond with the popular group, because we all went out drinking and all that other stuff. All right, so now we get to college. First year of college, I actually started out at Northeastern University in their engineering program. I went for one semester, and I knew it wasn't for me. I actually had one professor fail me in physics, I think it was. And when I went to him, I didn't have a failing grade. I went to him and asked him why he failed me, and he says, "Well, you're a girl, aren't you?" And I did not fight that, but I did not want to stay in that engineering program. So I should have fought it just so that other females in the future would not have a difficult time with that, but I didn't. And I kind of regret that. So I just let it go, and I dropped out of Northeastern University. Took a couple semesters off, still with my boyfriend, so drinking became a little more frequent while I wasn't going to school, but still not out of control. And then I was at work one day. Now, at this time, I was a library page, which, for those of you who don't know, you actually work in a library with a Dewey Decimal System, and you go fetch books for people. That's what I did during my high school days. So anyways, I'm flipping through a book one day, and I saw Massachusetts College of Pharmacy, and I've always been very interested in medicine. My dad was very sick when I was growing up. He had heart conditions, and something stuck out in my memory. There was one day I was visiting him in the hospital. I remember the nurse had given him a handful of pills, and the nurse made him name off every pill, tell what it was used for, when he was supposed to take it, what were the side effects, all this stuff, and he's saying all this stuff, and I'm a little girl listening to this, and I was amazed that he knew what all these things were for. I'm like, oh my gosh, he seriously had a handful of pills. And that just amazed me. So when I saw Massachusetts College of Pharmacy, I said, I could do that. So I went to pharmacy school, and I did very well until I met my husband. I met him actually my first semester there. I transferred in my second year. My college credits enabled me to skip that first year. It's funny because I knew I was going to marry this guy the day I met him. I had actually had a dream about him the week before, and then I see him in school, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just too weird. So I knew this guy was going to be my husband. And we did. We got along great. He was the right guy at that time in my life. I am not going to badmouth him. His only downfall was that he did not see addictions as a disease. He saw it as a weakness, and he would let me know that I was weak and I should be able to overcome this. But as we all know, we can't do it on our own, as much as I tried. So we dated all through college, got married, and during my college years, I didn't drink at all. I mean, occasionally here and there. But what we did do is he introduced me to speed, which we used whenever we studied for an exam. We would stay up all night and study and use speed. He also introduced me to cocaine, which I thought was just awesome. So I'm already developing a love of feeling different than changing how I feel, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So let's see, we graduated in May of 1987. We took the Board of Pharmacy exam in June of 1987. We bought a house in July of 1987. We got married in August of 1987. Found out we passed the boards that same week, and then in September, I found out I was pregnant with our first. So we had a very busy summer in 1987. It was very full. And I didn't use or drink or anything while I was pregnant. It was good. Life was good. Had my second child about 18 months later. They were both boys, Jeffrey and David. After David was born, we decided we were going to move to Las Vegas. Pharmacists out in Las Vegas make a whole lot more money than they do in Boston, Massachusetts, where there are 5 pharmacy schools, so we decided to pack it up and move. I do want to mention, though, we had already been out there on a vacation, and I'll tell you, the first time I pulled a handle on a machine and saw those lights and heard those bells, this is for me. This is really cool. I had no problem enjoying gambling. And I won. I was a lucky person. I won frequently. I'm not saying I won all the time, but I won frequently. So when he decided to move to Las Vegas, I had bells going off in my head saying, oh my gosh, I can gamble. I should have known this was going to be a problem before I even got there. But I'm all for it. Let's go. And actually the day we moved out there was Friday, April 13th. How's that for an omen, huh? We get out there. I've got 2 boys at the moment. Gambling started soft slowly, but it eventually became a nightly occurrence to the point where my ATM card was being used daily. I had no problem taking out cash advances on my credit cards. So I was depleting all of our funds very quickly. I was the one paying the bills, though, so I was able to hide it from him. I just kept paying the bills, and I used everything else to gamble. So we never had anything in savings, but I never put us in debt either. So then I started working out there. I did get my pharmacy license out in Nevada. I started working for a thrifty corporation. My third son was born about 18 months after my second one, so I had 3 boys, boom, 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 and I'm glad that it happened that way. Those 3 grew up to be such great friends. They were a treat, and they absolutely were. Still not drinking, not using. After Robert was born, I mean, I'm absolutely gambling every night, without a doubt, but after Robert was born, Thrifty's had been a thriving business in Nevada, and all of a sudden we lost the culinary contract within Nevada. That's their biggest contract. So we went from filling 1,000 prescriptions a day to maybe 100 a day. And when you go from being that busy to all of a sudden not needing any help, being there by yourself for 12 hours, it's very boring. And I was cleaning the shelves one day, and I saw a bottle of Fastin, which is speed. It's a diet pill, the pills that we used to take in college to stay up all night. And I remember thinking, wow, I felt really good when I took this in college. Why don't I take one of these, and I'll get the pharmacy all cleaned up? So that was my idea. So I did. I took one. I was bored. That's what it came down to, is that I was bored. I took one, and I cleaned the pharmacy, and I started thinking to myself, well, dang, I'd be much better if I took it at home and cleaned my house. So I decided to take a few home with me, and I did exactly that. I took some home, and all of a sudden, my house was clean, the ironing was done, the laundry was done, the kids were cared for, lunches were made, dinner was cooked. I was just nonstop. I could do it all. I was the perfect mom in the morning, went to work in the afternoon, went gambling after work, so I was probably getting maybe 3-4 hours of sleep a night, which at that time, that's about all I needed with the speed I was taking. And that again became a daily occurrence, was taking my speed. I remember I was gambling one night in the Excalibur, and with the Excalibur Hotel, if you hit a jackpot, they will take a picture of you with the machine to show your jackpot. I hit a Royal Flush, and they took a picture of me, and she handed me the picture, and I looked at this picture, and I said, oh my gosh, who is that? I am 5'8" tall. Normally, when I'm healthy, I weigh about 120 pounds. Not today, but back then. But back then, that was my weight. It was about 120 pounds. I weighed about 95 pounds. My face was drawn. I looked so sick, and I just thought, this is not who I am. But I couldn't stop it. Gambling is as much of an addiction as any other, and I apologize for... this is a big part of my story, so I can't leave it out. I absolutely knew. I mean, I knew a long time ago that I had a problem, but I also knew I couldn't do this on my own. But I never sought help. My husband's idea of getting me help was telling me to stop. And he thought that would do it. Just don't go. Okay, yeah, right. I'll do that. You know? So that's how he was helping. Anyways, I can't fault him. He just didn't understand it. So let's see. That was after Robert was born, so I'm using speed now. I got pregnant again. I need a sip of water. I got pregnant again, and I was using speed while I was pregnant, when I got pregnant. As soon as I found out I was pregnant, I stopped taking the speed. It's amazing when you have another life depending on what you do. I did not go back to my OBGYN right away because I'd already had 3 children. I knew what I'm supposed to do. I knew how to take care of myself. I put myself on prenatal vitamins. I was about 4-4.5 months pregnant, and I was napping on the couch, and I remember waking up thinking that something was horribly wrong. I didn't know what it was, but I knew the feeling was overwhelming, and I called my doctor up, and I was hysterical on the phone. I told him something's wrong, and because I was hysterical, they told me to come right over. I did. They did an ultrasound in the office, and the technician was so cute. She was smiling and talking to me. She's looking at the screen, and all of a sudden, her face went blank, and I just knew. So she said, hang on a minute, I got to get the doctor. You know, he wants to come talk to you. She brings the doctor in, and the doctor holds my hand as he's looking at the screen, and he says, Karen, I will always trust the word of an expectant mother. You have renewed my faith in their feelings and their emotions and their connection with their baby. The baby was anencephalic, which means that it had no brain. And that, I mean, as a pharmacist, I know that that is a teratogenic effect of speed. So there was no doubt in my mind that my drug use caused harm to that baby. We ended up terminating the pregnancy, and that that was probably the hardest thing for me to come to terms with, was that whole situation. I had a very difficult time forgiving myself for that. What helps me, though, is when I think about the things that God has forgiven me for, and that's one of them. You know, if He forgives me, then I can forgive me. That's what it comes to, and I find strength in that. So anyways, let's see. That did stop me from using speed. I did not use speed again after that. But did continue to gamble, though. Anyways, I got pregnant with my fourth, Kimberly. She was my gift from God. She, absolutely my pride and joy. I love all my kids, but she is my angel. She was born healthy, no drug use at that time. At the end of that pregnancy, the doctor had put me on Ambien because I had severe insomnia, and that's not good when you're pregnant. So anyways, I got addicted to Ambien. I mean, I get addicted to everything I put in my mouth. It does not matter what it is or what effect it is. If it makes me feel different, then I will take it. So I got addicted to Ambien, and Ambien has a lot of short-term memory effects on the person when you're taking 3 and 4 of them a day. I mean, who knew you're only supposed to take 1 a day? So I was having a lot of difficulty remembering things. Shortly after that, I owned my own business. It's 8:30 already. Oh my gosh, I didn't think I'd be able to talk for an hour, and I'm too far behind. Okay, so I owned my own business for a short time in pharmacy, and again, this is after Kimmy was born. I was taking Ambien on a regular basis, and after I had her, I had never taken any pain pills before. Even after my pregnancies, I took Tylenol, and that was it. After she was born, I had no problem taking Lortabs. Give me the Lortabs, that was good. That was like... the best euphoria I've ever had was being on Lortabs, and I quickly got addicted to them. It's amazing, too, now that I work at the Poison Center, I am amazed that my liver still functions as well as it does. The people we send into the emergency room, I would have been sent in 100 times with the amount I took. So I'm on Lortabs and Ambien. Owning my own business, I get in trouble with the Board of Pharmacy, and I don't want to get into really what I did. It was nothing involving controlled substances. I broke a law that I should not have broken, and I knew I was breaking it, so I had to pay the consequences. So I lost my license for a year. It was actually revoked, not suspended. There was a big difference. So my license was revoked for a year. I was sent to a pharmacy advocate in Las Vegas who was supposed to help me with my gambling problem. And he discovered I'm on medications and decided I didn't need to be on medication. So now all of a sudden I got to get sober, and I'm not prepared to do that. I'm not ready. I'm not willing. I'm in denial. I was a pain in the butt for him. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so I had a tough time, and he stopped supporting me several times. We really struggled with our advocate-client relationship. I had my license reinstated, but then it would be suspended again because I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't make my meetings with Larry. It was just back and forth. So anyways, I finally lost my license for the last time. I want to say it was somewhere around 2004, and I apologize. My time zone is all messed up. Too many drugs, too much alcohol. I don't remember what year anything happened anymore. It is what it is. I know it happened, though. So I finally lost my license, I think in 2004. Had no job, no hope. I was completely addicted to still Ambien, Lortabs, and I started drinking. And, we had had a bottle of vodka in our closet that my husband and I had bought when we bought our new house. And that was back in, I think, 1991. So this bottle had been sitting there from 1991 to 2004, and I had only drank an ounce out of it, which amazes me today. Think about it. An alcoholic's got this bottle sitting there just waiting. I pulled that bottle down, and I drank that entire bottle that night, and I was up the next morning at the store buying another bottle. So it took me one night, 24 hours to become a full-blown alcoholic, and that's what I did. Every day after that for the next 6, 7, 8 years, and we're talking the bottles with the handle, which is what size now? The big one. Yeah, and vodka, you know. And I was barely functioning, but I was functioning. My kids started to hate coming to my house. At this point, they were living with their dad. I let him have custody, but really I just didn't show up at court because I know the judge would have ruled in his favor. And, you know, I came to terms with that. I knew that he was able to take care of them and I wasn't. He was able to provide for them and I wasn't. But I know, they know that I love them, and I know that they love me. They hated to see me that way, and I realize that. And after that, it was just drinking alone. I did meet one man who was very abusive, and I called the cops on him several times. The last time we were together, he put a belt around my neck and tried to strangle me, and I managed to get away from that and ran to a neighbor, and he was put in jail for attempted murder. And that was the end of that, and was not sad to see him go either. That was God doing for me what I could not do for myself at the time. Anyways, my dad died back in 2010, and my brothers and sisters called me up. They bought me a plane ticket, and again, I'm drunk 24 hours a day now. Bought me a plane ticket so I could make it to Massachusetts to say goodbye to my dad. I managed to be dry, but I certainly was not sober. But I got out there to say goodbye to my dad, and we took turns taking care of him in the middle of the night. You know, he had the power of speech for about 2 days that I was there, and after that he lost the ability to speak. And it was the second night I was there, it was my turn to care for him, and he didn't even have any strength. I want to say he held my hand, but he just kind of touched my hand. And he told me to find God again, and everything would be okay. And those were his last words to me. It was very shortly after that he lost his power to speak. So he hung on for a few more days, and I stayed out there. My dad was a wonderful man. I wish that he could have seen me today. He would be so proud. And I know he's looking down, but I tell people that all the time. I really do. I know he's looking down saying, "You go, girl." But that started my recovery, was that one sentence. So anyways, I get back to Las Vegas, and this is after not drinking for 5 or 6 weeks, and I swore, okay, you know, I've gotten out of the habit of drinking. I can do this. And I stopped at the store on my way home in the cab. On my way home from the airport, I stopped to get my supply for the next 24 hours. So I couldn't even go 24 hours when I was left to my own devices. So I again started drinking again. My brother and his wife, who live out in Kennesaw, had offered me to move in with them, and I did. I decided to take them up on that. So I lived with them from September to July. July 2011 Eva, as much as I complain in the meetings, oh my gosh, she was instrumental in my sobriety. She found Celebrate Recovery for me. She took me to meetings. I did not have a car, so she drove me to meetings, drove me to work. She really took me under her wing, which I'm very grateful for. So I started Celebrate Recovery meetings. I have 2 months sobriety, and I'm thinking, all right, it's time for me to get my pharmacy license back. 2 months sobriety, I'm ready to go. So I found a pharmacy advocate in Atlanta who is just an incredible man. I have a tremendous amount of love and respect for this man. He's helped so many pharmacists get their licenses back and their lives back together, and he has done that for me. After being in his group for about a month, he says, "So, what step are you on?" Steps? You mean I got to work the steps? So he says, "Well, wait a minute. Have you done 90 meetings in 90 days yet?" Oh, dang it. So I had to find more meetings and Celebrate Recovery. So I started coming here to the Breakfast Club, getting my little paper signed for 90 days. And that was absolutely instrumental, too. There are many key things in my sobriety, but that allowed me to establish friendships and and people in sobriety to hang out with, and to not have someone that's always drunk or on drugs or whatever. People in sobriety, good, wholesome people that are working a program, those are the people to hang out with. If you want sobriety, those are the people to hang out with. So I did my 90-90, started my steps. I did my steps primarily through Celebrate Recovery. However, I did have an AA sponsor at the time. A lot of you may remember Jane. She helped me work through the steps through AA. So I did both. Jane has since passed. I do have a new sponsor today who does help me tremendously when I need it, which I appreciate very much. So I did work the steps, and you know, the step that stands out, well, step three, I'll tell you, I had no problem with step three again. My faith in God, I know that when I ask him for something and truly give him something, he takes it and he makes magic out of it. He does it every time, and I have trust in him to do that. I've got example after example in my life of him doing that. But step five, that was a turning point in my recovery, really. That's when I felt truly forgiven by God, and you know, that healing they talk about in the book. It's, you know, for anyone who has not done steps four and five, oh my gosh, those are the steps to not stop on. Keep going. Just, I know it's scary. No one wants to do step four and five, but the rewards are just incredible. And that enabled me, you know, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, step four, step five. It just put me on a fast forward course, because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm getting so much relief, so much healing from step five. I'm going to keep going. So it did. It gave me encouragement to keep going, doing what I was told to do, putting one foot in front of the other. And I was able to finish the steps. And I am a procrastinator. I'm the best procrastinator in the world. If I can put something off, I will do it. This was one thing that I did not put off, and the spiritual healing and relief I felt, number one, from not procrastinating, from go ahead and doing it, and just trusting in God, trusting in people, it was extremely spiritual. So now I've got my sobriety, I've got to finish the steps. It was 3.5 years into my sobriety when I knelt down and told God, I says, look, I've been in the hallway a long time. Can you help me out here? I had still been working at the hotel. I hated that job, but I went every night and I did the best job I could every night. That was a great sobriety job to have. It kept me humble. So 3.5 years into my sobriety, I said that little prayer on my knees, and the next week I got a call from my youngest son, Robert, who's living in Nevada. He was graduating from college from UNLV. And I had missed his high school graduation because I was drunk. And he invited me to attend his college graduation. And I was not going to miss it for the world. So I didn't. And Corey helped me with that, because I sure as hell could not afford to go to Las Vegas on a hotel job. So thank God for Corey. He helped me get out there. We went out to Las Vegas. Anyways, now, keep in mind, I had been trying to get in touch with my Las Vegas advocate for a couple of years. I had been calling him, leaving him messages, emailing him, and he just would not respond. So at this point, I'm thinking that bridge is burned. I will never get my license back. And, you know, but it, even though I'm thinking I will never get my license back, it didn't make me stop seeing my advocate out here. A couple of times I wanted to stop. I'm thinking this is useless, but I didn't. And that's because I had that tug inside of me that said that's not the right thing to do. And that's my God tug. That's my God voice saying, keep going. And I listened to it. Right after Robert had called, my pharmacy advocate in Las Vegas returned one of my phone calls. And I mean, I had left him a message saying, hey, I'm going to be in Las Vegas in December. Can we set up a meeting? And we set up a meeting, and we met. And he agreed to be my pharmacy advocate in Las Vegas, which that is a miracle to think that bridge was not burned. He even relieved me of the debt I owed him, which was probably about $2,000. He told me that he was wiping the slate clean. He was thrilled to see me in recovery. And again, that's another incredible thing. So in April of 2015, we have our pharmacy board meeting. And, you know, I have nothing to compare this to. The stress and anxiety of appearing before this board is worse than any court hearing or trial you've ever been through. This is just so intimidating. There are 12 people on the Board of Pharmacy. The president does not vote unless there's an odd number of people, and he's a tiebreaker vote. Anyways, when I appeared before this hearing, and keep in mind, too, the fear and anxiety the entire time leading up to this meeting, I shared about it frequently in the meetings, that I'm trying to give it to God and leave the results up to Him. And that is essentially what I did, but I'm still human and I'm nervous. I read off a little, they only let you talk for about 30 seconds, so I read off two paragraphs that my sponsor and Corey helped me put together, and it was from the heart. It showed recovery, humility, and the board responded to that. After I read that off, they grilled me with questions for about 40 minutes, and I answered every single one of them honestly and to the best of my ability, regardless of how hard the question was to answer. And God was in that room, because those people, nine of them voted for me to go ahead and proceed with being reinstated, and two said no, and the two that said no never saw me when I was in the middle of my addiction. They are the nine who saw me. Those were the ones who said, yeah. And I think that's noteworthy, because I think they saw the tremendous change in me. So now I've got approval to go get my pharmacy license. I haven't got it yet. I got a lot of studying to do. I have to retake the Board of Pharmacy exam. But it was the following month or two after that, I applied at Georgia Poison Center. And in fact, it was about a year ago today that I had just completed my final interview with them, and they said, well, we'll be in touch with you within a week or 10 days if you got the job. And even this was hard for me, because I know nothing about toxicology. I mean, pharmacy is not the same thing. It is very different. So I went through this 2-week study course, which I failed with flying colors. And I'll tell you, during that 2 weeks, my MO is, when I get scared, I'll run. If I'm scared enough, I will run. And there were a few days when I was outside having a cigarette, and I'm thinking, there's a bar right there. I got my car keys in my hand. My car's in the parking garage. I can just go. I don't have to go through this. And I stopped and I prayed. And that's what made me walk back in the door. I held my head high and I just kept going. Anyways, today I am still employed with Georgia Poison Center, and they have taken me under their wings, and they have taught me the job, and I have learned it, and I think I'm a pretty dang good employee. I've got a really good review over the last couple of months, so that's God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. He helped me learn that job. Let's see, I also want to... Corey and I met, I think I was about a year sober. He only had 6 months, so I guess I 13 stepped him, is what everyone tells me. Yeah. And we became friends out at the picnic table. And I got to tell you, that's another thing that was instrumental in my sobriety, was getting to know everybody out at that picnic table. To know everyone on a more personal level helped me to be able to come in here and share. I'll get back to Corey in a second, but I do want to mention, the first 2 or 3 months of coming here, I did not open my mouth. And I had decided, well, I'm just going to go and listen and just never share. And Damon changed that for me. There was one meeting that I'm sitting there so quiet in the corner, and he decided, I'm going to call on Karen, and I think my mouth dropped to the floor. I'm like, doesn't he know I don't share? Oh, my gosh. So, and since then, I have gotten a little more comfortable with sharing. But thank you, Damon, for that. That was God, whether you know it or not. So Corey and I started dating a year after my sobriety, and I'll tell you, the support and love that he has given me. He has supported me through the whole pharmacy thing, been with me with my nervous, I He's been my gift from God. That's what I see him as. Without him, I don't think I'd have 5 years sobriety. I really don't. He has brought much of the program into my daily life. I think I probably bring God into our lives. He brings the program into our lives, and so we complement each other very well. However, he's gotten very good at the God thing, too. Anyways, I don't know if I left anything out. I'm fairly close to the hour. I'm in shock. another thing I do want to say, too, is I really appreciate the love and support I get in this room when I come in here and share about things that are troubling me or even the good things. You people, what you're doing is you're allowing God to work through you, and I am forever grateful for that you come in here and you'd be willing to do that. I see God in all of you every single day. I see God in everything. I look outside. When I drive to work, I'm looking at the clouds, and that's all I see is God. So that's what keeps me going, is my faith and my love in God and his son, and I am no longer afraid to talk about him, and this program has done that for me, and I thank you all very much for allowing me to share.